This program is sponsored by Cane Vineyard and Winery. For more information, go to cane5.com.
Hi, everybody. You tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money. Making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, with my happy son, Andrew Newman, my co-host.
Happy son?
My happy son. And my illustrious engineer producer in the booth, Joey G.
Hello.
Hey, Joey.
Nice troubleshooting, Joe.
So we broadcast every Thursday from 4:30 to 5, and if you can't listen to us while we're streaming live, you can download a free podcast from iTunes, or all the episodes are archived on the website. During the show, we'd like to hear from you. If you're listening to us while we're live, you can call us or email us. The number is...
Marco?
He doesn't know
718-497-2128.
Or you can email at info@heritageradionetwork.com. So
I guess I gave it away.
Today we have a very special guest. Our show is about financial reality of dream jobs. And we have a dream jobber. His name is Marco Passanello.
The illustrious author of the new book, Uncorked.
Okay.
Marco Passanello in the house. So just so you know, next time, the phone number is 718-497-2128. When I point to you, that's your line, okay?
Good to know.
Okay. So Marco's here in the house today, and he's going to tell us how he's living the dream with all his plates that he's spinning up in the air, right?
Yeah. The dream.
Yeah, the dream.
So you're a plate spinner? I'm more of a juggler myself. Yeah. Joanne does nothing anymore. She just collects the tickets at the front door.
Yeah. So, Marco just launched a beautiful new book called Uncorked.
I just said that.
Wait, I'm going to tell a little bit more.
He said to plug it, but God damn it, how many times in the first five minutes?
So, I'm reading the book, and it's about... it's basically about the wine shop. Marco's an owner of a wine shop.
What's the name of the wine shop?
He owns... Well, Marco, what's the name of the wine shop?
Passanella and Son.
Wow. Okay.
And he, like Andrew just told you, he's an author. And he also owns a very beautiful old building in the seaport in Manhattan.
Okay, let's not give away all the details. I guess we can give away the address, since that's where... Yep. Passanello & Son is?
Yep. It's, what is 115 it? South Street.
There you go.
Manhattan.
Right in the South Street Seaport in the heart. Right across the street from the old Fulton Fish Market.
Yes.
Is the smell gone?
The smell's gone.
Thank God, finally.
Yeah. No, actually, the smell was nice. When it was fresh fish, it was nice.
Yeah. No, it wasn't bad. In fact, there was 75,000 pounds of fish every day going through our front door.
Yeah. Oh, you had a fish tenant.
Yes.
Yes, that's in the book. Tell us a little bit about, this is not your first book, Marco. Well, I found out that you had a corporate job. You had a corporate job and you quit to do what?
A corporate job. Well, I was a designer.
Yeah.
And I had a legitimate job,
No offense, but most people don't call a designer a corporate job. Were you putting on a suit every day?
But I was talking on the phone a lot. Yeah. Okay. Does that count? But writing memos?
Emails and phone calls are, I guess,
meetings.
Corporate.
And you went to a building every day?
Yes.
And sat at a desk?
Yes.
Okay, so corporate doesn't mean it has to be Fortune 500. And you got a paycheck at the end of the period.
But then a lot of people work a corporate job.
That's a corporate job.
Yeah. So the definition of a corporate job, no offense, Mark, I don't want to take away from you at this point, but I'm a little confused. So a corporate job is when you go to an office and sit in an office every day? That's a corporate job.
That's the beginning. But he had memos. He had phone calls.
There are memos everywhere. Non-for-profits have a lot of memos. Is that a corporate job?
That's a corporate job.
I sit at a desk every day.
Hey, Joe's a corporate job.
Do you write memos and answer telephone calls from your boss?
Yeah, I sure do.
Well, you have a corporate job. Okay.
I got to tell you, I sit at a desk too, but just with a glass of wine.
You see?
This is the dream.
So you had what we'll say is a job. You're working for the man, okay? You had a paycheck.
Yeah, well, it was my business, so yeah.
It was yours. I didn't
realize
that.
You see, look at that. I don't think that's a corporate job when you work for yourself.
So anyway,
in any case, but it was stable.
Yeah,
and it was at a point where I was doing okay. It was a good business.
And what happened?
I was feeling a little bit like, am I going to do this forever?
Right.
Is that?
I wasn't
bad?
Unhappy. It wasn't like a midlife crisis as much as a kind of like a midlife. malaise.
Yes. A lot of people feel that pretty much
every day. I feel
it every day.
I know, really. Yeah. Like, I'm only 30 and I'm already feeling that.
But,
like, I
don't but you quit. You quit.
Yeah.
But you wrote your first book then?
No, wrote my first book before I quit. No, my first book was on design, Living in Style Without Losing Your Mind.
So that was while you're still working?
Yeah.
And then tell us how you got out of there and into the seaport and into your dream life.
Well, okay, that's, yeah, yet to remains to be seen.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
But
it looks glamorous.
I'm on my way. I found a building in what was the old Fulton Fish Market, and I fell in love with it, right on the water. Total wreck, with a fishmonger as a tenant and a couple of tenants above.
Were they squatters or were they actually tenants? Or
they were what are called rent-stabilized tenants. Okay. So they were protected tenants.
Uh-huh.
Which is a landlord's nightmare.
Basically, yeah, hard to get out.
Yeah.
If that's what your
perspective
is. Anyway, so I was all of a sudden the man. We started renovating the building. And at a certain point, the fish market moved to the South Bronx. So the whole market that had been there for 150 years moved altogether up to the South Bronx. And we were left with a big open space downstairs.
So you were renovating your building to live in and to prepare for new tenants.
Right.
And so you were, you know, doing the typical New York construction nightmares.
Yeah. We were doing a little bit at a time.
And the most important thing, well, one of the most important things is, regardless of what business you're in, whether you buy a building or you open up a wine shop or you do any other kind of business, if you have the money to do it, it makes the life and the job so much easier. When you're struggling and you don't have the money to do the projects.
And you lost your biggest client, your biggest income garner.
And you lost the tenant. So that makes the construction project just so much bigger and worse and harder.
Yeah. And my wife was pregnant.
Oh, there you go.
Did you renovate around the rent control people?
I did. We bought out the first one, and then we moved into that unit and renovated it just enough to be able to live there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we bought out the second guy only a year or so later. And then we renovated his place and turned it into a couple of apartments. And we repeated that process, and now we have 6 apartments.
Nice.
And it's completely, construction is done.
Construction is done. Yeah,
that was
except
a long
for our
haul.
Apartment.
That was a long haul. How many years did that take?
We bought the building right after 9/11, so that was in 2002.
Years.
Yeah, so
10 years.
10 years.
Yeah, an overnight success.
Exactly.
10 years.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got the building. You're busy doing the building, and you quit your job and tell us your fish tenants leave. Your wife is pregnant. What do you do?
Well, we panicked first because we still had the mortgage.
And it was a big mortgage, right?
It was a big mortgage. And what made it hard is the kind of people who wanted to move into a half-abandoned building in the middle of what was nowhere were, you know, nightclubs and...
Your commercial tenants,
You're kind of like the people maybe you don't want to live above.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we were sort of... you know, a little bit hesitant to sign a lease with those kind of people. And then, and we were scared about a restaurant too, because we thought, okay, they're going to go out of business.
Well, what about the vermin?
Forever.
Yeah.
But
you had a fish guy down there.
Isn't there vermin already in the building then, if there's fish there as well?
Wow.
No, actually it was pretty clean. They had floor drains and they hosed down the place
every day.
Actually, it wasn't smelly inside. It was pretty smelly on the street.
Okay.
Well, the only reason why it smelled outside was when they would leave fish on the street.
I understand, but even same with a restaurant, though. A restaurant, you know, they like to keep the place clean as well. They don't want any vermin
well,
there.
Well, some restaurants.
Well...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, anyway.
So he didn't want a restaurant.
I understand. No, I'm just...
We did not want that. But we did realize that there wasn't a good wine shop. We were always enthusiastic wine drinkers, although not experts by any stretch. And we realized the only good wine shop was a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
And in an area of New York City where there are 200,000 people per square mile. And in an area that has... the highest per capita income. Not necessarily richest people, but the highest average per capita income.
That would be an underserved market.
Are you talking about the people who work
live
in the area
there.
or actually live there?
Who actually live there. Yeah, and was growing 13 times faster than the rest of New York. We did some kind of like preliminary research, and we're like, maybe it's not so crazy.
Wow, okay. I didn't know that area was that...
Well, after 9/11, they... poured a lot of money in get people to move down there. Oh, so yeah. It was the beginning of a residential boom.
Is the area coming around a lot more still?
Oh, yeah.
Last year, the Frank Gehry design building finished. It's 76 stories. I think it's about three blocks away.
I'm not going to say my opinion on that building, but yeah. I'm not the biggest of fans.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are. But there's hundreds of thousands of people who moved into that building alone.
Yeah. And I think when you are, from my perspective, you go, oh, that's like thousands more people to
buy.
That's
customers, yeah. Customers.
So do you do mostly walk-ins or is it delivery or?
Wine's heavy. So it's a lot of, there's a lot of delivery, but it tends to be a very neighborhood-based kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Like you go to your local store, even if you're having them deliver it.
Okay.
So you jumped ahead. Let's go back.
I'm sorry. This is how my mind works when it starts coming.
So here you are with an empty space and... You are looking at the space, and what happens?
And so here we are thinking about, well, here's a need. We don't see this wine shops around. Here seems to be a market. And we thought, maybe there's something there. We had approached some experienced operators about doing it and thought that that might be a good idea. And they all told us very politely, you know, to screw off. Yeah, what are you nuts? Crazy.
Was it the area or was it the...
Well, the street is not a heavy pedestrian
street.
Even
now, the street is mostly...
tourist?
No, there's nothing on it. It's still the old fish, the fishmonger's buildings
empty.
That are still boarded up.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So it's not exactly the humming retail location that you would want if you were sane.
If you had any screws in your head.
Yeah.
You
know,
the rent's right.
Yeah, and the landlord was very accommodating.
I was going to say, the build-out time must have been extraordinary. You must have had months of abatement on that one. So was it? How long did that process take before you decided that, you know, none of these people that we are interviewing are the right fit? You know, maybe we should just do this ourselves. When did you decide to just take the plunge and jump in and say, let's just do it ourselves?
I think it took us a good 6 months to start to think seriously about it. Six months of really exploring other people. And then we're like, this is starting to be a long time and we might have to take stuff into our own hands.
Yeah.
And then it went relatively quickly, although it's not easy to do the whole liquor license thing anymore. But
for the commercial side, I know I've done on the restaurant side and stuff like that. How long did it take you to start from start to finish on something like that?
It took us... From June through, it took us a good 9 months
to get the liquor license approval.
No, to do the whole thing.
Oh, to renovate.
From the moment we decided, okay, we're starting a company,
I see.
To the moment the doors were open,
9 months.
It was 9 months.
Yeah. Jeez.
And while you're doing this, you're still doing renovations upstairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And your wife had the baby.
We were doing the classes and stuff, right? And then she had the baby.
Yeah. So all of this, you're juggling all these plates.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
she's very understanding.
Yeah.
So I've 9 months to build, to design, build, license, and open the front door.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
And panic is a very good motivator.
I was going to say, that 9 months, I would just be freaking.
Buckets and buckets of money.
Of course. Well, you're pouring it out of both ends.
Yeah.
Was there money coming in still, or at this point, did you have the upstairs renovated?
No. I mean, the money was going out fast.
One direction only.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, we really, because I had some experience with building out those kind of places, we did it in a way where we actually did a whole lot of work for a whole lot less than you would have normally. However, for me, it still meant I was going backwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the space itself... Is it just wine shop, or is it more than that, or what?
The ground floor space that has the wine shop has a wine shop in the front, and we actually had what we thought was going to be a storage room in the back, which faced a garden with these beautiful French doors. And then we kind of realized, wait a second, maybe this is not a place to do just store boxes. When we made it into our tasting room.
A tasting room.
Yeah. Okay. So it's.
We'll take a break.
So let's take a break.
I want to hear about tasting.
He's going to come back and tell us how the rest of half of the dream jobs worked out.
Based on a novel by a man named Lear, and I need a job, so
All of us at Cane Vineyard and Winery are proud to support Heritage Radio Network and the growing movement to change the way we eat and think about our planet. For more information, go to cane5.com.
Okay, Flash Talks Cash. We're back talking to the dream jobber himself, Marco Passanella.
That song was a little off because it's actually a hardcover. Is it in paperback anywhere, or is
not
it?
Not yet.
Not yet.
No.
So where can you get the book, just off the bat?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble,
anywhere.
The usual suspects.
Fully published. Yeah. Who's your publisher?
Clarkson Potter, which is a division of Random House.
That's fancy.
Yeah, he's a big shot.
Oh, he is?
Yeah. And it's also available in the wine store.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of copies.
Do they let you sell books in the wine store? Because you have limits, right?
Yeah, but as long as it's wine related.
Okay, good. And the story is wine related. So you're going to tell us some more of the story. So now, 9 months later, you open up the store. When did you learn about the wine business? While you were doing your work?
Yeah.
Because you weren't a wine expert.
No, but we hired somebody who was pretty amazing and got in touch with people who really knew their stuff and had been really generous with their help.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're still learning the business. One of the things that we discovered though early on was that the place in the back, the Enoteca, the thing we thought.
Wait, you didn't talk about the Enoteca. You called it tasting room.
I just started.
Okay.
And then you jumped over to this. I was going to follow up with that, but
okay, go ahead.
Yeah, we had this room in the back that became a really great revenue generating place because we had this room for events. And
how big is the room? A storage room. I think of like a small room about mm-mm. like 10 by 10.
No, this has 13 foot ceilings and beams and bluestone floors and is about 600 square feet.
Sounds just like a storage room to me. Are you kidding me?
Well, we added those things.
Okay.
But what we realized was, hey, there's this other way of expanding your business.
So not only tasting, you rent it out for private parties kind of thing now? And
yeah. I mean, we do private tastings there, and we do a lot of stuff that we generate. And
how much of your business comes from that?
Probably only still maybe 25%, but it's a really good 25%.
Well, that's pretty good.
It's a great revenue stream for just
that's
the space.
That's good.
So the costs are already built into the front of the house, and now you're just pretty much...
Yeah, it pays better than just storing boxes.
Exactly. That doesn't sound like a storage room to me. With the fancy French doors and the beautiful
room.
It sounds like a beautiful room.
Well, it was a refrigerator. So it took a little bit of time to get it into being a pretty room.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So there's very few wine stores that have an Enoteca in the back store.
Yeah.
Back room. Is that
exactly.
true? Yep. Are you the only one that you know of?
That has a tasting room like ours? Yes.
Yeah.
So 9 months in, or how many months into your building, you decide to take on the space. 9 months in, you open the space, you open the back room. When did you decide to write a book then?
I got approached to write a book after an editorial I wrote for the New York Times about the New York State's crazy liquor laws.
So you became a proponent of small wine purveyors at some point against the liquor authority?
Can I just tell you what I remember when he told me this?
You want to remember what his life was like is what you're trying to say instead of him just telling you.
No, I'm going to tell you what triggered because he's being very humble about it. You know, wine the laws, they want to sell wine in supermarkets.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like they do in other states. And New York, you cannot do that.
Yeah.
So his take was, if I can sell cheese in my store, you can sell wine in your store. It's kind of right? Is that what you...
Yeah.
I remember you telling
it
me
it wasn't
that
I was so excited about grocery stores becoming competition, but I thought, I'll accept it if the playing field is equal.
Right.
So you want to become a specialized store that sells more than just wine, then, if, you know...
Not particularly.
No.
But I thought that if
they're going to do that...
If push came to shove, well, at least let me then...
Like, they're not going to specialize in wine,
don't make the rules
wine,
just
but,
for one
exactly.
side.
They're not going to specialize in wine, but you can at least then offer something that can be paired with a wine.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sell some nuts and cheese and chips and dip.
So when did that happen?
That happened a couple years ago.
So you wrote the editorial.
And then I got a call from an agent who was super smart and guided me through making a proposal and said, I think there's a book here. And
wow.
And he really was the person who
Who is that?
Really pulled it together. His name is David Kuhn.
Okay. So you have a book agent, huh?
Oh, I mean, I had a book agent for this book. Yes,
yeah,
that's fancy. Wow,
I want an agent.
Yeah, well, you got to write something. So
I can have an agent for other things. You want to be my agent?
How hard was it? Now, we know how hard it was to do the real estate all this time. In these 10 years, you're still renovating the building, and you got the wine store. And it took how many years for it to start to really be a viable business?
It actually didn't take very long for it to be something where we thought, oh, actually, this could have potential. A couple of years. But really now, we're entering our sixth year. Now it feels like legitimate.
Right.
6 years, that's a long
very
time.
No, it's very common. In my opinion, this is my opinion, 1 to 2 years, you're struggling and you just don't know which end is up. 3 to 5 years, it starts to catch on. You start to scratch your head, go, And 6 to 10 years, you're in, you're established, and it grows. And it just, you say, where is this coming from? Sure. And it's good.
Well, let's hope.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
So now you got the building. You're working on the building 10 years. You're working on the long wine store 6 years. And you're writing another book. How easy is it to write a book, Marco?
It's not very easy.
Right. Tell the people that dream how everybody wants to be an author and how hard it is.
I mean, there's the writing part, which is really hard. There's the money part, which is very little.
Yeah.
Which part would you want to know more about?
Well, you could talk about both rolled up. I mean, it looks glamorous. A lot of people say, oh, I could write a book. There's a book in me. Everybody says that,
Who
right?
says that?
Lots of people say
I've never said that.
Well, you have.
I can't write. Well, I don't want to write. I have a great story, but I would never try to write it down.
Yeah, well, that's what a lot of people say, too.
It would be like 5 pages. I'd be like, I was born, I went to school.
How many people attempt to be published authors, and they fail miserably?
Well, it's like saying how many people attempt to be musicians, you know?
Well, I think, and now, in particular, from what I've gathered, the world is a really different place for that sort of creative endeavor.
Right.
And, you know, you used to be able to hit it big being a musician if you had that one hit, and now, you know, that's changed. And it's the same thing for books.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's not the same as
it
was.
The industry is in decline, no doubt.
Well, I don't know if it's in the, I guess it's just
change.
There's a lot more streams of getting the information out there, and, you know,
right.
That makes it a lot different. You know, you can't make as much money anymore. But so what was the hardest part? What was the most difficult part? Creating the whole book or seeing the bottom line and being like, this is not worth my time?
Well, I think I accepted that to begin with, and it's not to say that you know, my agent did actually a great job. He got a substantial advance, but, or at least I thought, it's close to 6 figures.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which of course you don't realize that you actually don't get in advance. That was the first thing to realize.
What happens?
You get a quarter of it.
Okay.
When you actually sign, you get another quarter. At least I did after I finished it.
Uh huh.
You get another quarter when it comes out, and then you get another quarter a year later when the paperback comes out. So yeah. Your advance,
that's not an advance,
is sort of part of your advance is really way after.
Uh-huh. So it's after, it's an advance on sales.
It's an advance on royalties.
Yeah. It's an advance on sales.
But not necessarily an advance of doing it. So
yes.
If you think you're getting paid all that money just to sit down and write, you're not.
No. So a quarter, that's not a lot of money.
No.
Plus then the agent gets his cut.
Yep. First.
That's, yeah. So his whole cut came out of your first?
No.
He gets a net check.
Wow.
He gets a net check after
exactly.
The commission's
okay.
Pulled out.
Uh-huh. I got the net check. But, and then, you know, it's hard. Yeah, it was hard to write a book. It's hard to write about yourself.
How long did it take you? How long does it take to write a
year.
It took you a year?
Yeah. It took a year.
Wow.
So, you see, that's the whole point of this. You know, people look at your life and say, wow, you know, you have a pretty good, you have it easy. You don't have to go to work every day.
Well, he
day.
Said it was easy. You heard about his desk. There's a glass of wine and a bottle on it. I, you know, sounds pretty easy to me.
Well, tell us how your job is these days.
I mean, I think it's easy in that I'm starting to feel like I'm a little bit master of my own life.
Yes.
But it's not easy in that from the moment I wake up until the moment I go to sleep, it's not like work gets turned off.
Yeah.
And it's certainly like your tenants are saying, oh, you know what? I'm not going to call him tonight. You know, I know it's my air conditioner is not working and it's probably a little late. But
yeah.
I think he needs his beauty rest.
They have
people
refrain,
don't do
right.
that.
They don't have any refrain, right?
So you're sort of on call all the time.
Yeah. So you're the super of your building.
I'm the super. Yeah. We do have people come and clean and do some fix it stuff.
You're the first contact.
Yeah,
you're the property manager.
Yeah,
yeah.
You can outsource something like that. Sometimes.
Yeah, he knows that.
Yes,
he knows that. However, so the dream job is it it's not easy. One of the things I want to tell the listeners is it's satisfying. And now it's 6 years later, you look back and say it's okay. But I mean, there must have been days when you just said, I got to stop doing this. This is insane, right?
Yeah. No, and some of them were like last week too.
Yeah. Good. And so, you know, you have that. And then the other thing is the financial stress. I mean, during these years, you had periods where you didn't know where your next how your next bill was going to get paid, and some bills didn't get paid at times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of people can't handle that. You handled it.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the benefits of being in the wine business.
Yeah, that's a good anesthetizer. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And then also the risk, the general risk of what you did. I mean, you opened up a wine shop. It could have failed. You went in there full speed ahead. You and your wife were supportive the whole time.
Yes.
And that took a lot of courage to open up on a street that was, you know, very lightly traveled. Mm-hmm. There had been no retail store in your area.
For 150 years, yeah.
And you bought this broken down building that you had to have a lot of vision and a lot of courage.
I know this sounds all depressing, but it didn't seem that way.
Because you had a vision, having the design eye had to have helped.
I think I saw this beautiful brick building, federal building on the waterfront, and I was like, okay, so it's got graffiti on it.
Do you call yourself a dreamer?
I think, you know, yeah, I can dream, but I'm also a realist.
Yeah.
I think you have to have the combination
of
being able
to. Well, I think you made your dreams come true. Yeah. And it didn't exactly turn out exactly the way you thought they would be, did you?
No, but I think that's part of it,
right?
That's part of it is you keep your eyes open, and then if things change, you change with them.
Yes, right. Because what you think initially 6 or 10 years ago, and opportunities come along and people put up roadblocks and you have to make left turns and right turns.
And also, I was just plain wrong about certain things.
Yeah, and also there are things that you just didn't have any idea what you were going to encounter. And then you wake up 10 years later, you look back, wow, it's even better than I thought it was going to be. You find that? I find that a lot.
Yeah.
I find like, oh, I thought it was going to be XYZ, and with all the turns and twists in life, I wound up being in ABC land, which is even better than XYZ.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I'm waking up singing every day, but I feel... like I feel satisfied in a profound way.
So I didn't get to the end of the book. Does the end of the book talk about that?
Like that happy ending? You
yeah.
mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are you going to run the book for us?
I wanted to know. I want to know.
Are you the person
complete.
Who reads the last page first and then starts the book?
No.
Like, oh, this is going to be a sad book. I'm going to throw it away. I need the happy ending.
Because it's very interesting. It's like your life history. It's like this phase of your life. It's like this part of your life. It's a history of your life.
It's an autobiography, we call those.
Well, he's not really talking about himself. I don't know. Maybe it is an autobiography.
Are you talking about yourself?
Well, I'm trying to talk about
the
wine
journey.
World.
Yeah, the journey.
Talking about the journey.
Yeah.
Talking about my stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's a really pretty good book. So it's called Uncorked. He's Marco Passanella.
What's your next step is my question then.
That's a good question.
I guess we'll wait till the next time you come in and
you
tell us
I'll tell you next time.
You got any ideas, any dreams, any more things that you got to accomplish?
Like a dozen.
Well, tell us a few of them.
No.
No?
People might steal it. We'll have him back in like another 10 years.
No.
And he can recap after his next book and say, this is what I did.
Is there another book coming down the road?
Who knows?
Who knows? What's the next step?
All right. Uncorked, Marco Passanella, the owner of Passanella & Son Wine Shop on South Street in the Seaport. The book's available Amazon, Barnes & Noble,
everywhere.
And thank you, Marco, for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.